Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJF Jeffersonville.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. Today's show is all about the sun. Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report highlights sunspots, and Gordon Smith from Renewable Energy Solutions speaks to us from Wayne County, Pennsylvania, about a recently designed solar energy system generating electricity with the intention of reducing the use of fossil fuels. All of that coming up on today's Farm and Country. First, news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Columbia University students protesting the war in Gaza are vowing to continue their encampment until their demands are met. The Columbia protests have sparked similar demonstrations on college campuses across the country, including at the University of Pennsylvania, where student Emma Herndon is among those demonstrating.
We're hoping that they recognize the testament to the voice of so much of the student body that's present here, and the faculty that are present as well.
Penn's interim president, though, Larry Jameson, says the encampment there violates university policy, and he's warning protesters to disband. At Columbia last week, more than 100 protesters were arrested by police, leading to harsh criticism of the school's president. Columbia sent an email to students last night saying bringing back police would be counterproductive. Humanitarian groups in Gaza's southernmost city of Rafah making contingency plans in case of an Israeli offensive there, which Israel says is needed to eliminate Hamas. NPR's Becky Sullivan reports.
The UN agency that aids Palestinians has no plans to evacuate from Gaza, says Scott Anderson, the deputy director of operations there. But an offensive could force them to move elsewhere in Gaza, he says. They're working to stockpile aid and pre-position supplies outside of Rafah. A huge concern, he says, is what will happen if the million or more displaced Palestinians in Rafah will have to evacuate.
It would be utter chaos if they told everybody in Rafah, leave now. Now, trying to move a million people all at once.
Another concern is the truckloads of precious humanitarian aid that arrive each day across the borders in southern Gaza. If combat nearby forces crossings to shut down, even temporarily, aid groups say the result could be catastrophic. Becky Sullivan, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Hamas says it's reviewing a new Israeli proposal for a ceasefire in Gaza. The group said today that the offer is a response to its proposal from 2 weeks ago. Details of the offer are not clear. The hush money criminal trial of Donald Trump resumes next week after a former vice president at the Trump Organization testified that she saw Stormy Daniels at Trump Tower. NPR's Andrea Bernstein reports from the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse on the significance of that testimony.
Rona Graff worked for Trump for 34 years as one of his most loyal assistants. She testified under subpoena with her legal team paid for by Trump. But in a clear voice, she verified records she'd maintained, including a mobile phone contact labeled Stormy and another contact for Karen McDougal, the Playboy model who said she'd had an affair with Trump and who received a hush money payment of her own. Graff said she saw Daniels in the waiting room of Trump Tower and knew she was an adult film actor at the time. The defense raised the possibility that Trump considered Daniels for a role on The Celebrity Apprentice. Testimony continues on Tuesday. Andrea Bernstein, NPR News, New York.
The judge hearing the hush money case has set a hearing for Thursday on what prosecutors allege are further gag order violations by Trump. And you're listening to NPR News.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Gordon Smith from Renewable Energy Solutions speaks to us from Wayne County, Pennsylvania, about a recently designed residential solar energy system generating electricity with the intention of reducing the use of fossil fuels. But first, here is Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report about sunspots. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. While Earth's magnetic field radiates from poles near the geographical north and south poles, The sun's magnetic field radiates from many points on the sun. The sun's magnetic field follows a predictable 11-year cycle. During its 11-year cycle, the sun goes from a period of low sunspot activity, known as solar minimum, to a period of high sunspot activity, known as solar maximum. The current cycle, solar cycle 25, began in December 2019 with a solar minimum. We are approaching solar maximum, a time of increased activity on the sun. This cycle of activity is marked by the number of sunspots on its surface. Sunspots are dark areas visible on the surface of the sun. Sunspots are areas of strong magnetic fields that are about the size of Earth and are cooler than their surroundings. Cool is a relative term because the sunspots are 6,500 degrees Fahrenheit, still far cooler than the 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit of the surface of the sun. Sunspots form when the sun's magnetic field lines become twisted and block the flow of hot gases to the surface. The magnetic field lines can become distorted because the sun spins much faster at the equator than it does at the poles. These strong magnetic fields then prevent the gas from rising to the surface. Because these areas have less gas reaching their surface, they become cooler and darker than the surrounding areas. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Welcome Gordon Smith from Renewable Energy Solutions in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. Gordon shares ideas on a recently designed residential solar energy system that's generating electricity with the intention of reducing the use of fossil fuels.
I'm Gordon Smith. I'm president of Renewable Energy Solutions. I do a number of different things, but solar has been a thing that I've been doing now for 13 years. Definitely seeing a big upswing in people who are wanting to put in solar. It's both a combination of the solar, and now more and more people are looking to do solar with batteries so that they have the ability to go through a grid outage without problems.
As a resident of the Delaware River Valley, I have noticed that there's a lot of interest in the community with residential solar. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a lot of uncertainty in the world these days, and the ability to produce your own power is part of both a financial security. People put that in so that they, you know, in later years, they won't have to worry about their electric bill. And also because if you're producing your own power, you kind of know that it's going to be there no matter what happens.
I have attended solar tours with the Seeds Group, and I came away from that experience knowledgeable, but it's almost overwhelming the amount of information that's available, especially the technical terms. Most people, they're unfamiliar with solar systems. So we're in a situation right now that, to give an example of a residential installation, can you please describe this particular residential application for solar?
Okay, so we try and make it as simple as possible. The thing that we look at when we're designing a system is how many kilowatt hours of electricity. That's what's on the meter that you're billed by each month. And we look at how many kilowatt hours have you used in a year. And we try and design a system that would meet that need. Obviously, you need more power certain times of the year. You know, if you've got a pool, you're running your pool pumps and that takes more, et cetera. So we look at the overall yearly picture. And then the thing that we're looking at is how many solar panels would it take to do that? And again, it's not necessary to do all of your electric needs from solar. I mean, I've had customers who've come to me and said, I'd like to get started in this. Can we do one panel? Sure, we can do one panel. And of course, by the time we got done, he's like, well, can we do two panels? And the next year they wanted to add another, and the next year we added another. So it's very possible to do a gradual approach. But typically people are like, I want to offset all my electric, which is where I was starting to go originally. We look at your total usage. We figure out how many panels would it take to do that. We look at where would be an appropriate place to put those panels. Is it on a roof that you've got, either on the house or the garage or the barn? Is it better to put it on the ground somewhere? Those are the kind of the basic criteria. How many panels, where would we put them? That's the basics to start with.
And of course, this is all based on environmental location. We are in Northeast Pennsylvania and in the Catskill Mountain area. How does that factor into the design?
They've studied weather patterns over all different parts of the world, and certainly this part, that tells us how many average sun hours we have a day. It's different, obviously, here than it is in Arizona. We don't have all of the long sunny days that they have there. But the interesting fact is that some other countries like Germany, which has been always had a big solar, you know, thing and a big uptake, everywhere in the United States has more solar access than Germany does. So that's an interesting fact. So in our area, we have a little bit over 4 full hours of sun every day on average. So if you look at the 365 days of the year, your average will be 4 plus full hours of sun. And that's what we use to design. Obviously, you know, in Arizona or something where you have lots and lots of sun, it might be closer to 6. When we design the system, we look at, again, how many panels producing at full bore 4 hours a day will generate the electricity you need to offset your load.
Despite the fact that January this year in 2024, there was maybe 3 days of sun in the entire month, how does that factor in? Every day was gray.
That's all part of this factoring. The fact of the matter is that it doesn't have to be full sun to get some gain. So on a day that's somewhat overcast, you will still get some solar production. But then the offset, of course, is, you know, middle of the summer. You got 12 hours of sunshine, more or less, and that's all affecting that average.
Let's talk tech a little bit over here. In a simple residential system, walk us through the flow of electricity, how it's generated from the panels all the way through consumer using it. There's a lot of technical terms, but there is a path. Explain the path. Use some of the technical terms for the parts that go into making a system like this.
We'll talk mainly about the electrical flow. We're not going to worry about mounting hardware and stuff like that so much. But you have a solar panel, and they produce so many watts of power. Typical residential panel now is there 400 watts is kind of a norm for panels. In commercial, you might see 550 watts, but they're based on how many watts of power. So let's just say you have a panel. It's producing roughly 400 watts of power in full sunshine. That power is going to be DC power, just like you'd get off of a car battery. Okay, it's a direct current. There's different configurations, but bottom line is that panel with its DC power is connected up to an inverter, which takes the DC power and turns it into AC power. AC power, of course, is the kind of electric power you have in your house that you run your toaster and your lights and everything else off of. So the panel produces DC power. That power goes to an inverter. The inverter converts it to AC power. Obviously, you may have multiple panels. You might have multiple inverters. The sum of all of that production will go back to a common point of connection. And that's going to be your main electric panel. And the way it's connected there is there's various ways again. But the bottom line is that AC from all of your devices goes to the electric panel. Once it's there, it will be first used up in supplying the needs of the house. Anything going in the house, you have a refrigerator going, you have the well pump going, you have your heating system going, whatever. That solar power will be integrated into your home house usage. Depending on, obviously, the time of day, there might be a little bit of solar being produced and introduced into your household usage. There might be enough solar being introduced to cover all of your household usage, in which case you're not buying any. There could be a surplus being generated during the day that is not only feeding the house, but the excess goes back to the utility company, generating credits with the utility company. Now, the idea of the credits is that when the sun goes down, you start to use up those credits overnight, again the next day. And in terms of the big picture, summertime, if we're doing the whole, you know, trying to cover all of your electric usage in the summer, we're going to build up credits that exceed even the monthly bill. You'll end up with a bill of basically zero. You still have to rent the meter from the utility company, which is a good deal. You end up with a bill that's basically zero, and you end up with credits. Over the summer, you might build up multiple months of credits. Then as you come into the winter, you're no longer exceeding, you're breaking even, and then you come into deep winter. And with the shorter days and the inclement weather, now you're not producing enough, but you have those credits. So you start using up credits where you're not producing enough solar on your own. And the idea is, if you're trying to cover the whole load, that at the end of the year, pretty much you've come out with not owing them and not having any surplus credits for the kilowatt hours. So that's the kind of the general flow. That's the give and take. They call it net metering, where you buy from the utility at night or in bad weather. And then when you produce solar, you generate the credits and they net out your credits versus your purchases. The idea would be to get to a zero.
That's a lot of information, and you explained it quite well. What did you learn in your background? How long have you been doing this?
I've done a lot of different things. I've been a contractor for a lot of years. I've done everything from install kitchens. I began to focus in 2008 when there was kind of an upset in all kinds of things. I stopped doing kitchens because nobody was installing kitchens per se, and began to focus more on energy efficiency and on solar, alternative energies, etc. I took some training in the solar, and I did both solar electric, which is what we're talking about here. I also did solar hot water. They call it solar thermal, where you put a thing that collects the heat from the sun, and you use it to heat your water, you heat your house, heat your pool. I've done all of that. The solar thermal was kind of a great thing for a while, but they require a certain amount of maintenance. In fact, a fair bit of maintenance. And the solar electric is nice because pretty much we install it and we're done. It's not that they never have some kind of a maintenance thing, but it's very, very light on maintenance. Many customers I've installed, I haven't talked to them in years and years. Not because I don't like them, just because there was no need. At that time, I got training in the renewables, which was the solar. It was fairly light to find enough people to make a living doing that. So I also got into energy efficiency retrofits, did a lot of energy efficiency upgrades on homes. New York State ran a program to incentivize and support energy retrofits. I did a bit of that. I also got into doing the mini splits, heat pumps, and all of those things, because again, they were an attempt to reduce your energy needs. So that's all part of my picture: energy efficiency, high efficiency energy equipment, both the heat pumps and also higher efficiency water heating, higher efficiency, kind of everything. And I'm still doing a fair bit of that. I have a number of customers I'm putting heat pumps in.
With all this knowledge, are you involved in any community events or organizations that share this on an educational basis?
Well, I'm definitely part of SEEDS. I'm part of their advisory board and try and support that as much as I can.
Let's talk about what happens when the power goes off due to a tornado or a winter storm, for whatever the reason, trees falling on wires. What is that experience like for the consumer, and how do they monitor that if they're not at their home?
The important thing to understand is that there are really, at this point, two kinds of solar arrays. There is a grid-tied solar array without battery backup, which is what most people are installing. And certainly if a national marketing company approaches you, they're probably going to be selling you just a grid-tied system without batteries. And in a situation like that, they are grid-tied, as the name implies. When the grid goes down, your solar goes down with it because they are integrally connected. And the solar of your house has to shut down so that nothing goes back to the utility company and creates a hazard for their employees, those people who are out working on the lines to repair them. So that's one scenario. In a scenario where there are batteries involved as part of your solar array, the plan there is that when the grid goes down, your inverter will, through a mechanism called a transfer switch, right? It will disconnect from the utility and it will begin to draw power from your batteries or from the solar or both. And that battery solar combination will keep, typically, you assign a critical load. You would put things like your refrigerator and your heating system and water, maybe a few lights. The things that you really need to keep going would be on this critical load panel. It would be possible to put the whole house on a battery backup, but batteries are still fairly expensive. Batteries are measured in how many kilowatt hours they will provide. And typical batteries are somewhere in the 5 to 10 kilowatt hours each, and fairly expensive at that. So if you look at your average daily usage, most houses are 20, 30 or more, maybe a lot more, kilowatt hours per day. So 10 kilowatt hour battery or battery system is not going to cover everything that you want during that outage. But it will most likely cover your critical loads, keep the water running, keep the refrigerator going, keep the heating system going, not electric, but furnaces, boilers, etc. And with the combination of the solar to help provide power during the day and help recharge the batteries during the day, chances are that you could go for quite a while on a battery with critical load system that would have sun during the day, keep your batteries charged, run your stuff during the day. At night, you live off the battery, and then you look for sunshine the next day. So in that situation, although you're living on primarily critical load, you can usually get by fairly comfortably. If batteries ever come to the point where they're really affordable, then you would certainly consider going with a whole home backup. But for now, it's a very workable solution to have batteries to keep your critical stuff going.
You mentioned national companies. What should the consumer know about national companies?
So the national companies, they obviously generate more leads because they have a much more aggressive sales and marketing crew. They need to generate a certain amount of sales. They also have the advantage that they're able to do financing, and they have various different options for financing that many homeowners need the financing that they can provide. Some of them even offer a what we'll call a power purchase agreement, meaning that they don't actually own the system outright. They, in a sense, are leasing the system to the company who puts it in and sells them the electricity. It can be a nice arrangement. it sometimes means that there's like no upfront cost. The downsides to that are, you know, the possibility that you don't own what's on your roof. That's a little bit awkward if you're trying to sell the place or whatever. That's an issue. They typically, in my experience, charge quite a bit more than a local person. Now, granted, they have much more overhead. They're also offering this financing. So between the financing and the additional overhead, their prices are generally maybe quite a bit higher. I actually do work for a national company. I feel like they're pretty good. They have a staff to report difficulties. The way they handle maintenance is they hire someone like me to do the install. They don't have installers all over the country. They find local people to do the installing. And when there's a problem, they hire the local people to come back out and resolve the problem. It's not a bad scenario. It works for some people. The odd thing is that you still end up with me, whether you go with a national company or whether you hire me directly. It doesn't matter to me what I'm charging them. If you can do it, hiring someone directly, there's other people in the county who do solar. I'm not the only one. Almost certainly it's going to be more affordable overall than the national company, but it means that it requires the whole amount of money for the project to be paid at the end of the job.
There are so many folks in our community that are interested in installing electrical solar in their residence. What advice can you give them to start their investigation?
I guess I would say to most, I would certainly get at least a couple of quotes. I mean, if you have someone that you know and trust, and maybe they've done something for your friend, if you're completely new to the market and what you've got in hand is a quote from a national company, talk to the local guy. See if you can work out something. If you're brand new and you're not well educated in it and you don't know all the different parameters, do your homework. If you want to understand it, it's out there. Go get it.
You mentioned seeds earlier.
Seeds is great. They have various different training and learning experiences. They have people on staff who will assist you if you want a solar assessment for people who would like to have third party assess their thing. Excellent idea. But if they have a class, by all means, get an education. The prices that I'm seeing now for some of the equipment are so affordable. I don't see a major change in that. I think if you're thinking that it might be right for you, but you're not sure if that now is the time, I would say do it now.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us. You're a wealth of knowledge about solar.
I'm glad to do it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Gordon Smith from Renewable Energy Solutions serves as a member on the SEEDS Group Advisory Board. The SEEDS mission is to promote energy efficiency, renewable energy, and sustainable living in our communities. More information is available online at seedsgroup.net. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guest, Gordon Smith from Renewable Energy Solutions, who serves on the SEEDS Group Advisory Board. Thank you for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM on your phone or smart speaker and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
Hey, this is DJ Chucks of Old School Sessions. Please join me and Selector Starkey at our new time, 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. Saturday night.
Old school, baby. Old school, baby. Old school, baby.
That's Old School Sessions right here on WJFF, 8 to midnight, Saturday night, only on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from FarmArts Collective.